My name is Jennifer Lee, in case you don't know, and I'm going to be giving a little introduction first to Indonesian religion and ritual, and it's actually more specific than that. I spent about a half a year in North Sumatra with a group of people whose name is Batak. They're part of the Batak tribe of people, and more specifically, there's five different Batak tribes there. The Toba Batak tribe, because they live on Lake Toba, which is a big lake. You can see it if you look at a map of Indonesia. And it's on the island of Sumatra. And of the Batak people, nearly one-third of them are Muslim, which is actually a pretty small percentage, since 95% of the Indonesians are Muslim. One-third are Muslim, one-third are Christian, and the rest are animist, and they practice primal religion. And I'm going to try to define that for you, although it's still pretty indefinable in many ways. About 200 to 300 million tribal peoples of the Americas, the Africas, Asia, and Oceania practice a religion much like what I'm going to talk about. Primal, I'm going to try to explain where the definitions of animism, primitive religion, primal religion, and tribal religion. There's a lot of different names given to it, but primal was coined for the benefit of giving a definition of something prior to universal religions, which are Buddhism, Christianity, Muslim, Hindu, etc. And that was coined by an anthropologist who was trying to get a grasp of what all of this meant to the people who practiced it. Primitive religions can, another aspect of it is the religion of peoples living in small-scale societies with simple material culture and lacking literature. It's much an oral passing on of their beliefs, and it's pretty primitive stuff. It's been studied by anthropologists, psychologists. Freud and Jung studied a lot about primitive religion. Theologians and a lot of modern writers have received inspiration from primal religious experiences like T.S. Eliot, Ezra Pound, and D.H. Lawrence. And animism comes from the Latin word for spirit, and animism can probably most best be defined by the belief that everything has a spirit, and these spirits are either in the living realm or in the dead realm. There are spirits of things that have already died. And I believe that these primal beliefs teach us a lot of essential stuff about human experience and human and the divinity. Primal religion is best described with the word, two words, I believe: relationship with gods, with spirits, with fellow human beings, and with nature. And this stuff can't be separated. It's real part of a whole. And it's another word would be balance, that all of this has to remain in balance in order for it to work, in order for everyone to be happy and for the spirits to be happy. Now I'll slip more specifically. That's kind of a general introduction of these 200 to 300 million people's beliefs of tribal people throughout the world. The Toba Batak people, the central aspect of their belief is a totality, and this connects with the relationship and the balance. They experience the cosmos, the community, the individual as a totality. All matter, both dead and living, play a part in this totality. It relates to all dominant aspects of the Batak experience. It relates to their marriage, the way they get married, the way they eat, the way they farm, the way they sleep, the way they speak. And it all revolves around an extreme regard for ancestors and the adat. And adat is, I've discovered, is not particular to the Toba Batak people, but adat means the customary law of the people that is handed down through generations and through the ancestors' wishes. The harmony the balance and the harmony that comes from their experience is a relationship with two spirits. Each person, well, first of all, each person doesn't experience a separate physical and spiritual reality. They talk about it being very much connected. So without this dualistic concept of experience, I'm now reading from this paper I wrote, the Batak thinks of him or herself not as an individual in regards to mind and body, but rather as a soul who is part of a collective, a totality, uniting the physical and spiritual. The soul, called the Tondi, T-O-N-D-I, experiences life as an encounter between two souls, wills, or spirits. For the Batak, every moment and every aspect of life is a struggle between his or her own soul, called the Tondi, and countless hordes of spirits called the Begu. And included in this concept of Begu is the idea of these ancestral spirits. Sometimes they are good and sometimes they are evil. And this Tondi, this superstition of this Tondi and Begu is still really prevalent, even amongst the people who have adapted to Christianity. If one becomes ill, it's believed that the Tondi has left their body, so they create a ceremony to recall the Tondi back to them, back to the person, and regains the harmony. Another example is when they're greeted, it's much like how you would shake a hand here, but you shake the hand and you return your hand to your soul, to your Tondi, to make sure that my Tondi is, you haven't taken any part of my Tondi away. They believe that when a person dies, the soul does not die, rather it's a process of dying, which is a transformation from the Tondi to the Begu. So your Tondi joins the spiritual realm with all the other ancestral spirits. And it's considered to be a living spirit, and it continues to have influence upon the totality, the living totality. Now I'll give you, this stuff is really important to the tribal people who, even in Indonesia has a government, but there's a lot of really secluded areas that don't have this is a quote, I didn't mean this quote. But the relative lack of centralized, coercive, secular power, the influence of a government, for example, leaves the primitive culture to consider the gods as an important sanction. They sanction and correct the ways of the people instead of having concrete rules. It's a lot of moral rules that the gods supposedly announce, but the gods aren't the ones that are giving the rules. It's really that they're supporting the rules that the ancestors and the people have traditionally passed down. Now I'll give you a little introduction to this dance that I'm going to do. There's, along with the ceremonies that would be created to regain people's Tondi if they were sick, there's hordes of different ceremonies. There's ceremonies in funerals that last weeks long that they go through to make sure that the balance is still there after the death. I didn't ever go to a funeral. I'm kind of glad I didn't, because I saw a video of one and it was really long and really exhausting, it looked like. There's ceremonies that this grandmother that I was living with, or she was living with the family that I was living with, she had a ceremony in anticipation of her death, and she invited all of her family and presented them with ulos, as this is an ulos, and it's a really important part of their tradition, with hopes to try to begin to keep the transformation into the ancestral spirit from the Tondi to the Begu to try to maintain some balance in that process. And this particular ceremony is a lot of this stuff is recognized by the people who have become Christian, but some of it is considered a little bit too pagan for them to be able to integrate it. And there's a constant struggle with most of those people to try to figure out what is right and what is wrong, because the missionaries at first came and there was a lot of, for example, the banyan tree, which I'll talk a little bit about, is a banyan tree is planted when the king of the tribe is dead and his spirit is in the tree. And the missionaries came and cut down the tree and said, I'll prove to you that your beliefs are wrong. And they cut, and supposedly if you cut down the tree, then you would die. And he cut down the tree and he didn't die. And so ever since then, there's always been a lot of doubt about the accuracy of all this. But there are a lot of Indonesians who have returned to the tribal, the primitive beliefs of the Batak people. And this ceremony I saw was a video of the man that was in charge of our stay in Indonesia. He's been here, actually. His name is Bill Rice, and he is a real video fanatic. And he filmed this ceremony, which is called Bulan Sipahasada, which means literally the first month of the year ceremony, and during which there's a lot of the traditional dance that goes on in anticipation of the ancestors entering into the ceremony. And they're called upon, and a lot of the, there are some gaps in the music that you'll hear, and there's a lot of dialogue going on, and I imagine that a lot of it revolves around, you know, talking about what the best way to call upon these ancestors would be. And there's always the possibility that you would call upon an evil Begu. So there's a lot of trying to stroke and make sure we get a good ancestor. And the ancestors are called upon and speak through members of the clan who participate in the ceremony. And in this particular one of the women became possessed, or I don't know how you would want to describe it. She was a medium, and she then spoke to the people in the clan, and they talked about a lot of things. They asked advice on where they should plant certain fields. They asked advice about if certain families should be trusted as a part of to continue as a part of the clan. And there was one situation where a woman's husband had died, and they asked the spirits whether or not she should marry his brother, and there was a lot of tension with it because I don't think she really wanted to, so they were really depending on hearing what the ancestors had to say. So it can involve legal and marital and agricultural advice, along with probably the most important part would be emphasizing the adat, which is the common law. And because these were good, not evil ancestors, they emphasized, we are the ancestors who kept the adat and the truth. And they went up to the camera and warned, he was a white man, warned him saying, you must keep your own culture, use our culture wisely, keeping the adat. So it was kind of interesting that there was even dialogue supposedly between the ancestors and this white man. So I'm going to do this dance in three parts, and in the dance there's going to be one specific movement like this, and that's traditionally the women's role in the dance, and then another part I'm going to be doing, I can't do very well, but the men have a little bit more freedom in their movement, and there's going to be a part where I'm going to be doing that more. Keep in mind, this is a ceremony that takes place over the noon, over the daytime and the hot sun, and he had filmed the whole thing but had edited a lot of it out because it was really long. And so keep in mind, this woman was dancing like this for a really long time. Just an explanation of some of the props. I didn't have a banyan tree around, but so we're doing another pine experience. But the banyan tree is a whole nother issue that it's kind of their tree of life, and it's really involved in their cosmology of choosing. They have predestination. They believe they can choose who they are, and it comes from somehow connected with the banyan tree. I could figure that out and talk about that a lot too. This is actually not specific to the Batak people, but this is a sarong, and this is an ulos, and I was presented a couple uloses while I was there. It's a gift of great honor to be given an ulos. It's something that if someone was ill this woman was dying and she presented it to her family members. There are three, incidentally, I don't really know very much Batak language because I learned Indonesian, which is the national language, but I know three Batak words that come into this. And in the ceremony, I'm going to be using the word horas, which is can mean God bless you or balance be with you. It can mean a lot of different things. And mauliate means thank you, and you'll hear some of the men speak that. And menotor is dance, and I learned that really. They went, menotara. And I think that's all. I should probably ask if you have any questions now, because I don't know if we'll have any time afterwards. Does anyone have any questions? Yeah, they actually wear something more like an ulos on their head, and it looked like they pretty much just had it propped on their head. It didn't look like anything was tucked in. And then they don't wear the uloses every day. They would have probably a sarong and pretty tight kind of tailored shirt on, actually.